This is New England Public Radio's Jazz Beat. I'm Tom Reaney with a podcast edition of my jazz blog, which you can find at nepr.net. Today's Jazz Beat podcast focuses on Chuck Berry, whose 90th birthday is October 18th. Last week that Bob Dylan was being awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature signaled another level of recognition, maybe the ultimate, in the ongoing acceptance of rock and roll as an art form. Between rock and roll's own Hall of Fame, the conferring of lordships, knighthoods, and presidential medals of freedom on rock stars, and the presence of rock in the groves of academia, the music seems as secure as could be. But the word on Dylan had hardly broken before social media began swirling with the names of those whom others felt equally or more deserving of the honor, among them Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, Smokey Robinson, Paul McCartney, and Richard Thompson. My guess is that the Nobel Committee won't make a habit of the naming of persons known primarily as songwriters rather than novelists, but I would argue that if the discussion returns to lyrical luminaries of the music world, Chuck Berry should be among those shortlisted. As it happens, Berry was honored in 2012 by Penn New England with its Songs of Literary Excellence Award. He and Leonard Cohen were the first recipients of the award, and for the occasion, the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Paul Muldoon said, "Take what we used to refer to as a boy and a girl and set them down in an automobile, front seat or back, and you have the essence of rock and roll." That realization was Chuck Berry's great gift to our culture. He helped people in the U.S. make sense of themselves. He also helped people like me in Ireland who knew in our hearts we belonged in the U.S. make sense of ourselves. What a thrill to honor one of the inventors of a genre that has quietly outlived so many of its loudest critics.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile, my curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio with no particular place to go.
October 18th is Chuck Berry's 90th birthday. In celebration, I've listened to his classic Chess singles and watched the documentary Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll. I also took another look at Chuck's appearance in the documentary Jazz on a Summer's Day. Bert Stern's classic film of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival takes little notice of the rain that fell on the festival that weekend. But if there's a storm cloud on the horizon, it's Berry, who enthralled the crowd but puzzled his accompanists in the hastily assembled Newport Blues Band. One of the most indelible images I carry from the film is the bemused look on the faces of jazz greats Joe Jones, Buck Layton, and Jack Teagarden as they back him on Sweet Little 16.
They're really rocking in Boston, Pittsburgh, PA. It's the heart of Texas, the San Francisco Bay.
Newport endured riots in 1960 and 71, but even though the audience kept its frenzy in check for Chuck, booking him marked a line of demarcation between a festival devoted exclusively to jazz and what its founder George Wein describes as a capitulation to the pressures of a rock and roll generation. Wein reports that it was John Hammond who produced the Saturday Night Blues showcase that included Berry. Hammond had presented a panoply of jazz, blues, gospel, and boogie-woogie at the groundbreaking Spirituals to Swing concert at Carnegie Hall in 1939. But the guitar slinger from St. Louis was another matter. I was dead set against Chuck Berry, Ween recalled in his autobiography. Rock and roll did not belong on the Newport Festival. When he went into his duck walk, I literally cringed. I could almost feel the critics' knives. Needless to say, the crowd loved it. And the grand irony is that putting him on at Newport was a daring move that led to similar presentations all over the world. So I get credit for being a visionary. But John Hammond deserves the credit. Incidentally, I've grown to like Chuck Berry's music. Well, who hasn't? Surely Jack Teagarden and Joe Jones would have recognized Berry's roots in the blues, and seeing the spirited buck and wing that a poplin-suited gent cuts while Chuck sings his ode to the girl in tight dress and lipstick underscores how much his music was rooted in the same vernacular as jazz. But in this case, one man's vision may be another's slippery slope, and the apparently irreversible trend we've seen in de-emphasizing jazz at so-called jazz festivals began at Newport on July 6, 1958. Newport went on to feature rock acts in the 60s and early 70s, but the storming of the gates in 1971 shut the festival down and sent it looking for a new home. A pleasing reversal of Ween's capitulation is that the festival he reestablished at Fort Adams State Park in Newport in the 1980s is a jazz purist's delight, and a big draw, too. It's the Newport Folk Festival that now hosts rock and roll.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing out run my V8-4. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the things you pulled up the 104, my phone got hot and wouldn't do no more. The gun got cloud and started to rain. I tooted my horn for the passing lane. My rainwater blowing all under my hood. I knew that I was doing my motor good. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do.
Charles Edward Berry was born in St. Louis on October 18, 1926. His brother Paul remembers him in youth as a deep thinker who loved to hear and play the blues. On his 1973 album Bio, the title song recalled his mid-50s sojourn to Chicago, with Berry singing, "Just to hear Buddy Waters play, I asked him what I could do to make it, and it was he who showed me the way." What Muddy showed him was the way to Chess Records, a magnanimous gesture that deep blues author Robert Palmer called cutting his own throat. Berry's success and that of another Muddy Waters protege, Bo Diddley, quickly minimized the value of the modest success that Muddy and other Chicago bluesmen enjoyed in the 50s. Once Maybelline began climbing the charts, Leonard and Phil Chess knew they'd finally struck a mother lode, and while they continued to record the bluesmen who'd put them in business, mining top 40 gold became the focus of their efforts. In his classic single Rock and Roll Music, Berry famously said he had no kick against modern jazz. Eric Clapton credits him with creating a beautiful hybrid that drew on jazz, calypso, country, and blues. Keith Richards says Berry's combined skill at songwriting, singing, and guitar playing put music back in the troubadour tradition. In Berry's case, however, traditional themes of chivalry and courtly love were superseded by teenage preoccupations with school, cars, and crushes, while the adult trickster in Berry subtly laid down boasts about black male sexuality in tunes like Brown-Eyed Handsome Man and Too Much Monkey Business, neither of which, by the way, made the hit parade.
Arrested on charges of unemployment, he was sitting in the witness stand. The judge's wife called up the district attorney. She said, "Free that brown-eyed man. If you want your job, you better free that brown-eyed man." Flying across the desert in a TWA, I saw a woman walk across the sand. She'd been walking 30 miles en route to Bombay to meet a brown-eyed handsome man. Her destination was a brown-eyed handsome man. Way back in history, 3,000 years, in fact, ever since the world began.
There's been a whole lot of good women shedding tears over a brown-eyed handsome man. It's a lot of trouble with a brown-eyed handsome man.
In Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, Roy Orbison praises Berry's lyrics for the way they roll off the tongue, stab and cut, and lay there with the drum. While in footage from a decade earlier, John Lennon says he loves the tremendous meter of his lyricism. Lennon also proposed the name Chuck Berry as a synonym for rock and roll. Jerry Lee Lewis, who feuded nastily with Berry for top billing early in his career, concedes that he's the true king, the Hank Williams of rock and roll. As for his guitar playing, Clapton says, there's not really any other way to play rock and roll guitar other than the way Chuck Berry plays it. He's really laid down the law. Keith Richards contends that Berry adapted his guitar style in emulation of pianist Johnny Johnson, who'd given Berry his start when he sat in with Johnson's trio at the Cosmo Club in St. Louis in 1952, then gladly handed over the reins of the group to Berry, whom he calls a go-getter. Keith Richards signed on as music director of Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll after he had inducted Berry into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1986, its inaugural year. Richards said, "It's very difficult for me to talk about Chuck Berry because I've lifted every lick he ever played. This is the gentleman who started it all." Notwithstanding the flare-ups that Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll captures between them, Richards carried the project through to completion, though in his memoir, he says Berry pushed me hard. You can see it in the film. It's very difficult for me to allow myself to be bullied, but I owed it to Chuck to bite the bullet when he was at his most provocative. In 2005, Richards sent a fax to Berry that read, "Despite our ups and downs, I love you so. Your work is so precious and beautifully timeless. I'm still in awe."
As I got on a city bus and found a vacant seat, I thought I saw my future bride walking up the street. I shouted to the driver, "Hey, conductor, you must slow down. I think I see her. Please let me off the bus."
In the documentary, Chuck Berry is surprisingly modest about his vaunted role as an inventor. "Making it simple" is how he describes the process of assimilating his influences. "You can call it my music, but there's nothing new under the sun." Who were those influences? He ticked off several near the end of his appearance on The Tonight Show in 1987, beginning with Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five, which was paramount, along with Timpani Five guitarist Carl Hogan and Charlie Christian of the Benny Goodman Sextet. He also cited the singing of Nat King Cole and concluded by saying, "the soul of Muddy Waters." He might have mentioned Bob Wills and Bill Monroe, not to mention Sister Rosetta Tharpe, whom gospel singer Ira Tucker credits with introducing the duck thing. But this was an informal and delightful exchange with Johnny Carson, not a musicological cross-examination. October 18th is also the birthday of Wynton Marsalis. In 1998, when I asked the trumpeter why he didn't think rock and roll should be celebrated, he said, "because it's like McDonald's." Then he added, "one thing it did do, it relaxed a lot of the sexual repression, but who knows if that wouldn't have happened anyway. It also destroyed adult culture, because it became increasingly concerned with getting that exploitable income from teenagers and young adults. The aesthetic objectives of American popular song didn't carry over into rock and roll."
I hate to see that evening sun go down.
recent years, Marsalis has come to collaborate with Eric Clapton and Willie Nelson. Is this a sign of maturity or a ploy to pay the rent at Lincoln Center? I'll go with the former. I came to a personal rapprochement between my measured appreciation for rock and my passion for jazz years ago, though I remain wary of rock's omnivorous impulse to devour everything it finds pleasing and the star-making machinery that goes with it. But I agree with Marsalis that it's had a devastating impact on our appreciation of the Great American Songbook, which today lives almost exclusively in the repertoires of jazz musicians and cabaret singers. It's rare indeed to meet a baby boomer who knows the songbook or relates to it emotionally. Still, it's Chuck Berry playing one of the old standards that closes Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll. In a quiet moment backstage with Johnny Johnson, Berry strums the chords to A Cottage for Sale, an elegy for lost love that his fellow Missourian Willard Robeson composed in 1929. Leave it to the deep thinker Berry to know better than most that it often takes more than three-chord rock to express what Winton calls the aesthetic objectives and what the rest of us know as the longing in our hearts. The inevitability of a figure like Chuck Berry emerging in the 50s was lost on many cultural arbiters of the time. Berry respected youth's own truth, and his sly brilliance as a lyricist and the hearty self-affirmation that drives his music offered Bob Dylan, Lennon and McCartney, Jagger and Richards a prototype for rock songwriting. They all knew from and drew from Tin Pan Alley, but it was Chuck Berry's ability to lyricize and express so many layers of the personal and social in American life that was the key to opening this new chapter in our music.
DJ. Yeah, it's a jumping little record I want my jockey to play.
For additional material on Chuck Berry, including his performance at the Newport Jazz Festival, visit the jazz blog at nepr.net. Thanks to Katie Wright for technical assistance. For Jazz Beats, I'm Tom Reaney.
Keep singing the blues. I roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news. I got the rockin' pneumonia, I need a shot of rhythm and blues. I caught the rolling off the writer sitting down at a rhythm review. I roll over Beethoven, they rockin' in 2x2. Well, if you feel it and like it, go get your lover, then reel and rock it. Roll it over, then move on up, just a trifle further, then reel and rock with. Run another, roll over Beethoven, dig these rhythm and blues. Nothing to lose. Roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news. You know she wiggle like a glowworm, dance like a spinning top. She got a crazy partner, you ought to see him reel and rock. Long as she got a dime, the music won't never stop. I roll over Beethoven, I roll over.